One of my guilty pleasures is reading a recurring column in the New York Times called Sunday Routines. You would probably recognize it. It's the one that says how so-and-so, famous person, spends their Sundays, his or her Sundays. And people say all kinds of things. You know, as soon as I get up, I go for a walk in Central Park, like to clear my head. We always go to my favorite brunch place. They've got this amazing kombucha, which you've got to try. Then I take my dog to his Pilates class. I love New York. I'm still waiting for the column where they say, well, we wake up exhausted because we had the kids out the night before, and then we try to get them dressed for church, and no one wants to put their clothes on, and then we go to Mass. And that's pretty much our Sunday. Yeah, when we get home, we get ready for the work week. Very few like that. More than a quarter of Americans now describe themselves as spiritual, but not religious. Spiritual, but not religious. And you can see the attraction in that. It's not simply this. It's not simply that they're scandalized by the many ways that, the church, the Christian church, Catholic church, has failed people. It's not only that. That gives people ample reason to start thinking twice about religion. There's something deeper there, which is very good. And it's a longing for the intensely personal contact with the Spirit, with the spiritual world that we grope for. That intense longing for a personal encounter. Not something that just applies to everyone in general, but something that applies directly to me. I think of that so frequently when I read these columns. You know, you're curating this particular personal experience of Sunday. You're looking for something. And the more I read these columns, the more they all start looking a bit the same. For all their infinite variety, they all sort of start looking a bit the same. But the search for the personal, the search for a deep, intimate encounter is there. In the event that we're celebrating today, we encounter figures who have had a very intimate, personal relationship with the Spirit. They are spiritual people. It screams to us off the page. Listen to this again, how Simeon is introduced. Simeon was a man righteous and devout, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would have this great vision, and he came in the Spirit into the temple at precisely the right moment. Spirit, Spirit, Spirit. It's as if Luke, in telling us his gospel, is hitting us over the head. This is a man of the Spirit. Same with Anna. Anna is described in the classic Old Testament tradition as a prophetess. Someone who listens closely to, what God has to say so as to say it to the rest of us. Intensely spiritual. And don't forget Mary and Joseph. This is the first time now that we're arriving in Jerusalem, the center of Israelite religion. But before this in Luke's gospel, the Spirit has been active all over the place, coming to Mary at Nazareth, coming to Joseph in the dreams, appearing to the shepherds in the fields. What we have here is a Spirit showing forth the sovereign freedom of God, who is in no way limited by human structures. The Spirit can pierce through and go immediately to the person God wishes to encounter. Which makes it all the more strange that the whole way that this event is framed for us is in relation to the law. Did you notice that at the beginning and at the end? This entire story is framed with respect to the Jewish law. Listen to this again. When the days were completed for their purification, according to the law, they go up to Jerusalem to present Jesus, just as it says you have to do it in the law. And what do they present? What's prescribed in the law. So before we hear Spirit, 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 What we hear actually is law, law, law. Fast forward to the end of this event. When they had fulfilled all the prescriptions of the law, they go back to carry on in their life. What's going on here? Spirit and law, freedom and prescribed activity, spontaneity and constraint. These things seem to be in inevitable opposition. How can they exist side by side? And hence the desire for many people of our own time, including undoubtedly you and me at times, to break free out of the law to get straight to the good stuff, get straight to the Spirit. And today, the good Lord places before us, once again, law and Spirit together. What's going on? For us, it seems like our limitations are a great obstacle that we've got to break out of. It prevents us from the full freedom of gathering more and more goodness to myself, and so I've got to break out of it. Limitation is seen as an obstacle. Notice, though, what happens when God, who is by nature free of limitation, what happens when God voluntarily assumes the limitations that have been given to us? It totally changes the meaning of them forever. Because now when you see the eternal Son of God brought forward to take part in the small, limited, constrained ways that we learn to encounter God, what happens is, all of a sudden, that limited way becomes a gift. It becomes a way that we can find the unlimited love of God in the limits that apply to our own lives. And by the way, not only there in the religious practice, but all the limitations that we would very much like to be free from. Sickness and death and the things that I'm not good at. All of these constraints now become a privileged way that God can meet us. It's something that Simeon and Anna knew, these spiritual people. Anna, the prophetess, who spends day and night in the temple. She hears the voice of God. Why should she have to stay in the temple? But she wants to be there, precisely there, to hear the voice of God. Where did Simeon learn, do you suppose, that he was going to see the Messiah before he died? Here's a proposal. Not in a motorcycle. Maybe there. I wonder if he didn't hear the precise words that we heard proclaimed today in liturgy in the temple. And he thought, you know what? I think those words may apply directly to me. Listen to them again. It's the liturgy of the world. Teilhard de Chardin did talk about Mass on the world, so there it is. The world's coming to us. Imagine, though, imagine Simeon there praying in the temple and he hears these words. Suddenly there will come to the temple the Lord whom you seek, you, Simeon, and the messenger of the covenant whom you desire. Simeon leaves God free to speak those words directly to him. They're not just objective words that's meant for the whole of Israel, and they zoom right past. No, Simeon gives God the freedom. Okay, God, if you want to speak the prophecy of Malachi directly to me, I'm available. And he feels the Spirit then move in his heart. That, my friends, is the power of the liturgy. It's why I'm not satisfied with being only spiritual and not religious, because God has given me both. The place where I can encounter the Spirit, the sure and certain place where I can encounter God, if I leave God free, is precisely here, if I open up my heart to it. and in baptism, and in confirmation, and in confession, and in marriage, and in holy orders. This very constrained, limited way can become precisely the place, if I leave God free, to speak to me. Let's ask for that grace today. Ask for the grace that God can say to us, you know what? The Lord whom you seek is coming to the temple, the messenger of the covenant who you desire.